Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lou Dobbs interviewing Jesuit Tom Reese of Georgetown University.
Does the church, though, or the Council of Bishops, Father, make any reference to the fact that we bring more than 3 million people a year into the United States legally? That we made more than 1 million people, U.S. citizens, naturalized more than 1 million immigrants last year as U.S. citizens, that almost half of them were Hispanic, because you make it sound as if there's some sort of constraint here to do things legally. We had a president running around for 8 years saying things like we need a guest worker program. We have 13 of them in this country. Why the duplicity, why the deceit, why the obfuscation in this debate rather than clarity and transparency, openness and honesty?
Well, I would like to see a program that actually worked. I mean, it can take 20 years for someone to get a visa to rejoin their family. This is just not a system that's working. What we need is a system that actually works, that allows people to get a visa, come here legally, and allows the, 10 million people who are here already, that have been living here, that have children born in the United States. There are 3.1 million children who were born in the United States of people who are here undocumented. They are American citizens. The government is threatening to take their parents away from them and send them back to the country they lived in. These are children who are American citizens.
You didn't answer a single question I asked, Father, but then again, you're a Jesuit. You can get away with that.
Greetings and welcome to Mystery Babylon Radio on January 14th, 2013. Tonight, we are going to continue on Chapter 31, page 305, The Revolutionary War, How America Became a Jesuit Enclave. From the book, Code Word Babylon, Danger in the Vatican by P.D. Stewart. This book can be found on the internet by doing a Google search on Code Word Babylon, Danger in the Vatican. Welcome back to the broadcast, Tom.
Good evening. Welcome. Nice to be back.
We're going to briefly review the word Jesuit enclave. I find it, as I read that definition again, it's a country or part of a country lying wholly within the boundaries of another. In other words, you could call it a shadow government or an unseen hand. And I also, I got some quotes from, example, Winston Churchill. From the days of Weishaupt to those of Karl Marx, this worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and for the reconstruction of society has been steadily growing. That was Winston Churchill. In the Woodrow Wilson said, "We are no longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and the duress of small groups of dominant men." Woodrow Wilson, 28th President of the United States. And also, General Smedley Darlington Butler said this: "War is just a racket. A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of people. Only a small inside group knows what it's about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the masses." That was General Smedley Darlington Butler. Also, I want to just touch on this. This is a quote from Adam Weishaupt: "The great strength of our order lies in its concealment. Let it never appear in any place in its own name, but always concealed by another name, in another occupation." I asked you last week, Tom, how do the Jesuits fly underneath the radar? And your response was that it's one of the most secret societies in the world. And to better describe this, I want to go back to JFK and let JFK describe this enclave. "For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted fast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War, in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy would ever hope or wish to match." Could you think of a better description of this secret society, Tom?
Well, all of these quotes point to a vast conspiracy. Every one of the quotes that you just gave indicate by the most prominent men in society, Churchill, Kennedy, Butler, and on, of a conspiracy to control the world. And, you know, oftentimes we're labeled as conspiracy theorists, as that is some kind of a disqualifying attack on one's thesis. But it's the same thesis brought by all these wise men, that there is a conspiracy that operates behind a cloak of secrecy, that it's intent on ruling the world, and that they use the world to accomplish their ultimate goal, which is global governance. And I'm particularly struck by Adam Weishaupt's comment. He said, "Never let it be known in its true identity." Well, even the Illuminati is a cover. What are they all covering up? The Jesuit influence, the Black Hand. They are the ones who are in control of all the secret societies, and they all work to the same end. That is a global government, a global religion, and a global economic system all underneath the Pope of their choosing. That's the way I see it, and that's what my research reveals.
Working to counter the Reformation.
Yes, to destroy Protestantism and to deceive the world about who Antichrist is, and then put the Pope in a position to rule the world, as he has always claimed as being his divine right. Anybody can research this for themselves, the history of the Roman Catholic Church, particularly the decrees and bulls and encyclicals of the Pope. They all assume that they are the divine right replacement of Christ on earth, and they should have all the attributes and all of the jurisdiction and all of the rights and all of the power of Christ. And the Roman Catholic Church, the Jesuit order, is hidden in plain sight. And all the other organizations that we've talked about so far simply draw people's attention from the Jesuit order.
And if you're going to hide a tree, best place to hide it is in a forest.
Yeah, in a forest where no one would suspect to find a tree, right?
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the reason I bring this to the forefront is we were talking one day off air. How could anybody study world history and study secret societies and not figure in the Jesuits into the equation?
It's the great, like we said before, it's the greatest secret in the world, and all of these secret societies are created to make cover for the Jesuit order. It should draw all of people's attention away from the Jesuits.
And I hear the term on many different medias is they talk continuously of globalists. What other organization has 112 ambassadors around the world with universities around the world? And what other secret society has more influence on a culture than the Jesuits?
Well, there isn't any. Of course, they don't make all that influence in their own identity. That influence is, as we've said, through Freemasonry, through the Illuminati, through the Club of Rome, through the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers. All of these are Vatican think tanks. And the Jesuits orchestrate all of these things. The Knights of Columbus, the Knights of Malta, all of these controlling agencies serve the papacy, the black papacy. They all serve to bring the Pope to world governance.
I mean, the Jesuits are militants for the Roman Catholic Church. Jesuits educate, they infiltrate, agitate, and dominate. And that's what we're seeing today.
Yes, certainly. And in the process, they have to silence the truth. And the truth is Protestantism and the authorized King James Bible, true biblical Protestantism. They have to silence Protestantism, because it was Protestantism that brought the knowledge to the world that the Pope was the biblical, historical, and prophetic Antichrist. And as long as there is true Protestantism in the world, as long as there is a true, unadulterated Bible like the authorized King James Version, there's always going to be a Bible believer with the courage to denounce the papacy as Antichrist and to expose the Jesuit order and all these other secret societies that ultimately serve the papacy's purpose in the world.
Well, we're going to get back into the book there, but the reason I brought this to the front again is that the Revolutionary War, how America became a Jesuit enclave. I mean, that is when I first read the book, that went right over the top of my head. But after 3 years and putting more information into my computer and rebooting, I mean, it's very, very clear how effective the enclave has been. So with that, we're going to start back on the book here. We're coming up one paragraph from where we left off last night. Another factor worth of note is that soon after Washington's Continental Congress declared its independence from Britain in 1776, a military alliance was formed with Catholic France against Protestant England. Next, Catholic Spain joined in. Why would France and Spain get involved in such a distant war? To ensure the success of the Catholic cause. If the reader still doubts that Rome had a hand in it and benefited from the fomenting of the American Revolution, then consider the following report written by Bishop John Carroll from a committee of Catholic clergy reporting to Rome in 1790. In 1776, American independence was declared, and a revolution effected not only in political affairs, but also in those relating to religion. For a while, the 13 provinces of North America rejected the yoke of England. Before this great event, the Catholic faith had penetrated two provinces only, Maryland and Pennsylvania. In all the others, the law against Catholics was in force. By the Declaration of Independence, every difficulty was removed. Every political disqualification was done away with, end of quote. Thus, in John Carroll's own words, the Revolutionary War was a war relating to religion. Of course the Catholic Church gave lip service to universal religious toleration, as it served her ends at the time. The ends justify the means. Catholicism was not a religion not tolerated, but the Church's real agenda is found in a letter of February 27, 1785, from John Carroll to Cardinal Leonardo Antonio.
Antonelli. Yes.
That's the most flourishing portion of the church, with great comfort to the Holy See, may one day be found here. In this opinion, he was joined by Father Charles Playden, who gave the sermon at Carroll's consecration on August 15, 1790. And this is a very profound paragraph here by Charles Playden. Although this great event may appear to us to have been the work, the sport of human passion, yet the earliest and most precious fruit of it has been the extension of the kingdom of Christ, the propagation of the Catholic religion, which hitherto fettered by restraining laws is now enlarged from bondage and is left at liberty to exert the full energy of divine truth. You got any comments on that, Tom?
Well, they declare that the Roman Catholic Church is the one and only Church of Jesus Christ, and that the Revolutionary War served that religious purpose. It gave Catholics liberty, and not only that, but since they fought side by side with Protestants, it put down the Protestant defense mechanisms that was the great fear of the Catholics during the colonial period. Remember, we're repeating ourselves a bit here, but it's necessary to remember that Catholics only constituted 1% of the population of the colonies. They were an extreme minority. They were very vulnerable, especially when the overwhelming Protestants in the colonies, were fearful that the Roman Catholics would bring the same kind of religious persecution to the colonies that they exerted upon Protestant Great Britain. And it was a matter of grave concern to the colonists at that time. And in order, the thing that the Revolutionary War did was it severed the colonies from the Protestant government of England. It put the Catholics and the Protestants in the colonies on the same side against that Protestant government, and it gave religious liberty to Catholics where they didn't have it before in England. And it was a triple win for the triple crown in Rome. And all John Carroll had to do was to just get the Pope to just back off a little bit and allow the American Roman Catholic Church to govern itself without his interference, and religious liberty for Catholics would be secured, and that over the course of history, as time went by, the Roman Catholic Church could grow and prosper through immigration and through its eventual control of the government, and then to conquer the United States, hopefully, if possible, without even firing a shot. And that's precisely what's happened.
Yes.
And, okay, so go ahead.
Let there be no mistake, the American War of Independence was a double victory for Catholicism. Firstly, over Britain having used the light cavalry of the Pope, the Jesuits, and the Freemasons to encourage the crown to pass those intolerable acts, and secondly, over the psyche of the American people. Thus did the Papists and the Jesuits play their role in the American War of Independence. That the Jesuits and their French Illuminists were the instigators behind the American War of Independence was hinted by President George Washington himself in response to a letter from Jesuit Bishop Carroll congratulating the president on his election. Washington wrote back on March 12, 1790, saying, "To the Roman Catholics of the United States, your fellow citizens, non-Catholics and princesses, will not forget the patriotic part which you took in the accomplishment of their revolution and the establishment of the government, or the assistance received from a nation in which the Roman Catholic faith is professed. We we observed also, by the by, the following revelations, which are clipped in a small print from the Denver Register on May 11th, 1952, that appeared, that the paper ran, the following article suggesting that Washington converted to Catholicism before he died. This is a quote from an article. A picture of the Blessed Virgin Mary and one of St. John were among the effects found in an inventory of the articles of Mount Vernon, at Mount Vernon at the death of George Washington. The Reverend W.C. Repetti, an archivist at Georgetown University, reports he has discovered this information in an appendix to a biography of Washington. The book is A Life of George Washington by Edward Everett, published by Shelton and Company in New York in 1860. Quote, the fact that he had a picture of the Blessed Virgin is rather unexpected, and to the best of my knowledge has not been brought out since Friar Repetti. The long report among slaves of Mount Vernon as to Washington's deathbed conversion would be odd unless based on truth. It is part of the tradition that weeping and wailing occurred in the quarters that Massa Washington had been snared by the Scarlet Woman of Rome. Father Neal was rowed across the Pescatini River by Negro oarsmen, and men often talked freely when slaves were nearby, confidently ignoring their presence. And from the Denver Register of February 24, 1957, it was a long tradition among the Maryland Providence Jesuit fathers and the Negro slaves of the Washington plantation that the first president died a Catholic. These and other facts about George Washington are reported in the Palest Information magazine by Dora Hurley. The story is that Father Leonard Neal was called to Mount Vernon from St. Mary's Mission across the Piscataney River 4 hours before Washington's death. Washington's bodyguard, Juba, is authority for the fact that the general made the sign of the cross at meals. He may have learned this from the Catholic lieutenants, Stephen Mullen or John Fitzgerald. At Valley Forge, Washington forbade the burning in effigy of the pontiff on several times as president. He is reported to have slipped into a Catholic church to hear Sunday Mass. End of quote. So it seems that President Washington lived like a Catholic during his life and was converted to Catholicism before his death. Bishop John Carroll said that Washington died as did Emperor Valentino, referring to the Roman emperor who, like Constantine, was received into Catholic Church just before his death. Washington was also a member of the Great Council of Fraternas, Rosicrucius, though this was not known only to the Great Council at the time, as he chose to remain incognito or unknown of the fraternity. After the War of Independence from Britain, the Pope sent thousands more Jesuits to work and insinuate themselves into the affairs of the new republic. Today, the Jesuits are openly working with the great men of the United States, and the leading political figures are bending upon their knees, fawning before the Roman pontiff. Thus, we see that the American Revolution was another great Jesuit enterprise, a most colossal conspiracy against the United States in one of their finest fields of victory, yet almost on the scale of that achieved by Loyola in the 16th century. Europe. Wiley well said, if despotism will not serve them, they will demoralize society and render government impossible. And from chaos to remodel the world anew. Do not doubt this, for the Jesuits openly say that fascism is the regime that corresponds most closely to the concepts of the Church of Rome. The Jesuits, you must understand, hate all free non-Catholic states, and so they seek to cure the evils of democracy by the evils of fascism, like curing syphilis by giving the patient malaria. And my comment at the end of here is a Jesuit enclave has not P.D. Stewart painted a clear picture. I also got a little short little article, as a president's speech that was made in front of the Pope on July 23rd, 2001, to John Paul II. Your Holiness, thank you so much, Mrs. Bush, and I am honored to stand with you today. We are grateful for your welcome. You have been to America many times and spoken to vast crowds. You have met with four American presidents. You know, one of the reasons I'm reading this article is from 1776 to 2001, to have a pope in the White House and entertaining a pope is a complete political change in our country. And Protestantism has just been forgotten about, you know. So this is the reason I'm reading this article. You have been to America many times and spoken to vast crowds. You have met with four American presidents before me, including my father. In every visit, in every meeting, including our meeting today, you have reminded America that we have a special calling to promote justice and to defend the weak and suffering of the world. We remember your words, and we will always do our best to remember our calling. Since October of 1978, you have shown the world not only the splendor of truth, but the power of truth to overcome evil and redirect the course of history. You have urged men and women of goodwill to take to their knees before God and to stand unafraid before tyrants. And this has added greatly to the momentum of freedom in our time. Where there is oppression, you speak of human rights. Where there is poverty, you speak of justice and hope. Where there is ancient hatred, you defend and display a tolerance that reaches beyond every boundary of race and nation and belief. Where there is great abundance, you remind us that wealth must be matched with compassion and moral purpose. And always, to all, you have carried the gospel of life, which welcomes the stranger and protects the weak and innocent. Every nation, including my own, would benefit from hearing and heeding the message of conscience. Above all, you have carried the message of the gospel into 126 nations and into the third millennium, always with courage and confidence. You have brought the love of God into the lives of men, and that good news is needed in every nation and in every age. Thank you again, Your Holiness, for your kindness and the honor of this meeting. Comment?
Yes. The world needs the encouragement of the Pope. He just tacitly acknowledged the Pope's global governance. The President of the United States, the Roman Catholic Church, has sure come a long way, hasn't it?
Yes, yes. In other words, you know, and what I want to close with, Tom, is even as long, much as I've read about the Jesuits, and the more I read them, and you know, and I talk into the secular world, I'll talk to somebody that is studying the CFR, the Club of Rome, Bilderbergers. What amazes me still, though, is how this part of history has just been swept out of the people's mind, and ecumenism took over.
That's the best kept secret in the modern world.
Yeah.
The Jesuit order.
Yes, that's the I can't think of it any different way. And because there's, you know, Tom, if I was to ask you a list of books that you have read, I mean, you have a whole library. There's hundreds and hundreds of books written on the history of the Jesuits and history of Rome. It's not something that's not in the books. It's the fact that they're social engineers, and it's so hard sometimes to grasp it. Like, and the thing that brings me always back home is the fact that history that we're talking about, because this program is listed not under religion. This program is about history. It's the history of the Roman influence on world history. And in other words, people will talk about the puppets all day, but what we're trying to bring forth on this broadcast is who's pulling the strings behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about the puppets all day. We could be talking about, Obama and Romney and all the little politics. But in other words, they're just the puppets, and they're just complete puppets. And the media, as never before, I don't think in history, Tom, have you ever thought about this too? I don't think never in history have they controlled the press as well as they do now.
Well, certainly the press was never as free as it is now. During the dark days, during the medieval ages, there was no press, and then there's no freedom of the press. And but today we have a press that started out at the beginning of this country was free. It reported the news. And now it's controlled. And the only information the American people get is what's been sifted and filtered and made sterile by the controllers of the information that we get. And it's interesting to note that one of the greatest, the most powerful media magnates in this country is a knight of St. Gregory the Great, a knighthood of the Roman Catholic Church, who swears an oath, first and foremost, allegiance to the Pope. And so all of this Jesuit history, all of the history of the Roman Catholic Church is stripped out of the news, stripped out of history books. And the world is left without anything to bind history together and to give it continuity. And I simply maintain, as may be already apparent to the listeners, that you can't understand history. And if you can't understand history, you can't understand current events. And all of that cannot be understood unless you understand the Roman Catholic Church has played in the world. And one of the best sources for that information is this book from which we're reading, Code Word Barbelon, B-A-R-B-E-L-O-N, Code Word Barbelon by P.D. Stewart. Stewart is spelled S-T-U-A-R-T, and he's from England, and he's written a two-volume set of books under the same title, Code Word Barbelon. And you can get this book, just Google the title, Code Word Barbelon, on any good search engine, and you can find an outlet here in the country. And I highly, highly recommend it. Listen, you can't get the truth on the mainstream media, and you can't get the truth even in the alternative media. You have to find those who are studied in the history of the Roman Catholic Church. And P.D. Stewart is qualified to write on this subject, and he wrote a two-volume set of books, and I highly recommend that they be read by every American. It's what has happened is that the world is unable to comprehend who's really controlling the world because of the futurist interpretation of Bible prophecy, which says that the Antichrist won't come until the last 7 years of time. But the fact is, all of the Protestant reformers to a man believed and taught that the Pope, the papacy, fulfills all the prophecies of Antichrist in the Bible. And they were absolutely correct. And because we have lost the knowledge, the Protestant knowledge, that the Pope, the papacy, is the biblical Antichrist, we don't search history for details of what role the papacy and the Jesuit order have played in history. And that's the cover that they achieved by foisting upon the world this idea that the Antichrist won't come until the last 7 years of time. It was created, it was an alternative means of interpreting Bible prophecy that was created by the Jesuit order, particularly Francisco Ribera was his name. And it's been a very successful deception. And I'm afraid it has contaminated the vast majority of non-Catholics, and Catholics even believe this as well. Look, if a Catholic wasn't deceived by this futurist deception, he might believe, or at least research for himself, what the Protestant reformers taught, that the papacy is, was, and always will be the biblical, historical, and prophetic Antichrist of the Bible. And it was imperative that if the papacy was ever going to raise itself to global governance, global supremacy, and head of the global religion and control of global economics, this teaching that the papacy was the Antichrist had to be destroyed. And it was destroyed. There are very, very few, precious few people in the world that know about this, and even fewer that will talk about it. But I'm not afraid to talk about it. The survival of my nation depends on the people of the United States finally comprehending the deception of the futurist lie and the truth of the historical and Protestant teaching that the Pope is the biblical Antichrist, and it is he who is about to rule and reign this world while the Protestants are asleep. And no book exposes this better than Code Word Barbalon by P.D. Stewart. It's a must-have book, and I highly recommend it.
Well, Tom, where I'd like to go next is in this book, the preceding chapters were the American Civil War, and then he covered the Revolutionary War, and I think it's really the basic, what I have found by sharing information on the assassination of President Lincoln, the average person doesn't even realize that there was four people executed and that there was a conspiracy against Lincoln, that there was more than one assassin. And when people understand there's so many books, and that's another thing that it's amazing, the fact that they could commit a crime, but what is always amazes me is the power they have to cover it up. And
yes,
you know, it's in other words, if America knew their history, and you know, I want to appeal to the people, the listeners that are listening to this, because we don't have a big audience, but you know, we've got some listeners, and all it takes is one listener share this with two other listeners,
yeah.
And because what we're giving you here is not coming over the alternative media or the mass media. It's not coming out of the universities. They do not teach history.
in the universities today. I quoted it two different times out of Tupper Saucy's book, you know, and when I read that, it still sticks with me. I mean, I might be talking to a college graduate, but he doesn't know anything about the Spanish Armada or the gunpowder plot. You know, in other words, and how many people realize...
Well, how many people know about the extirpation and annihilation of the Waldenses or the Albigensians or the Hussites? How many people in American society today have ever read Fox's Book of Martyrs? All of that is critical history. It used to be mandatory reading in America.
Yes.
But it's never mentioned anymore.
No. And myself, I was raised in a Lutheran church.
Yeah.
And I got no education. I had no idea. I'm 68 years old, and it wasn't until about 5-6 years ago that I started getting wind of what was going on.
Yeah.
And what was the real, who was really behind the curtain.
Yeah, most Protestants are never taught what importance history plays in our understanding of the Bible. And I want to explain briefly for your listeners why it's important to study history. Because when God prophesies something in his Bible, we know it's going to come to pass. We just don't know when. So the only way that we can understand if the Bible prophecies are true and if they have come to pass is to examine their fulfillment in history. So in order to see the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, we simply must look at history. And as startling as it is to those who've never heard this before, much more of Bible prophecy has been fulfilled than most Protestants or evangelicals realize because they don't know history. Now, we talked about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. I'll recommend some history books. The Suppressed Truth About the Assassination of Abraham Lincoln by Burke McCarty, and 50 Years in the Church of Rome by Charles Chenecky. And there's another book by Emmett McLaughlin wrote a good book. I can't remember the title of it right off the top of my head. But there's a lot of good history books that tell the secrets of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln that are never reported in history books, never reported in the press. And they link the Roman Catholic Church. How many Americans can tell you that the main conspirator for the assassination of Abraham Lincoln was a Roman Catholic? And how many of them know that he was spirited off and protected in Canada and then eventually shipped to London and kept there for a time and then eventually wound up in Rome at the Vatican and was serving in disguise as a bodyguard for the Pope? And when he was discovered by an American who was touring the Vatican shipped him off to Alexandria, Egypt, where authorities of the American government caught him as he disembarked from the ship and brought him back to the United States to stand trial. How many Americans know this? How many Americans know that John Surratt and John Wilkes Booth and all the other conspirators of the Lincoln assassination were members of the Knights of the Golden Circle? And that they were tutored by Jesuit priests, and that the Jesuit priests were the ones that organized not only the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, but to wipe out nearly his entire cabinet. These are facts of history. And people are afraid to talk about these things because it points the finger of accusation squarely at the Roman Catholic Church and most particularly to the Jesuit order. And to do that warrants an accusation of an anti-Roman Catholic bigot and a hater. And people are just simply not willing to put themselves out with the truth for fear of being called nasty names.
We're almost out of time, Tom.
So, it's very important that we know history.
Yes.
We can't see Bible prophecy fulfilled unless we know history.
Right. So listen, with that, Tom... I'll see you back here next week, and we'll get on the Lincoln assassination.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I got a poor starting life, heading downhill real fast. Can't see the future, ain't recalling the past. I'm at the crossroad of life, stuck on the tracks.